Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
This is Squawk Pod from CNBC. I'm producer Cameron Costa, and on today's episode, Redditors hit Wall Street. The 19-year-old social media platform finally makes its public markets debut. We hear from one of the moderators who helped build Reddit's user value, Courtney Swearengen.
I have had this relationship with Reddit for so long that I can't really trust them.
Plus, a conversation you will only hear on this podcast with CNBC reporter Jonathan Vanian.
Moderators are a very unique bunch on Reddit. A lot have kind of issues with the management of Reddit over the years.
And Washington trying to take a bite out of Apple.
I'm in the Apple ecosystem. I don't want to leave. I don't feel like they're bullying me.
A landmark antitrust case kicks off. CNBC's Steve Kovac.
And it's all centered around the iPhone, which the DOJ alleges gives Apple monopoly power.
Plus, reporter Kate Rogers on the productivity gap when working from home.
We've gone to this place and it's so hard to pull back from that, especially for kids who started their careers with some type of flexibility.
And the Boeing board meeting with airline companies, but without the CEO.
Is it like an intervention?
No, I think it's like a skip level meeting.
It's Friday, March 22nd, and Squawk Pod begins right now.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Squawk Box right here on CNBC. We are live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. I'm Becky Quick along with Joe Kernan. Andrew is off today. We've got Steve here. We're going to talk to him in just a minute. Steve Kovac's joining us with a big story of the morning. Also, the Dow, the S&P 500, and the NASDAQ all coming off another record-breaking session. I think that's 20 records set this year for the S&P 500. By the way, for the week, it was a very good week for all of the markets. They were up by 2.5 to 2.75%, I think, for the major averages. Treasury yields have come down after the Fed meeting was more dovish than had been anticipated. 10-year right now at 4.23, the 2 years at 4.6. And if you check out gold prices, they've also been coming back down after topping the 2200 level. So all of this kind of leading into the FOMC meeting, coming out of it, this is almost like March, in like a lion, out like a lamb. And that's what we're watching today, 2168.
Yeah, well, we got the same temperature as the date.
I know. I'm in a turtleneck again, third
it's
day
the same,
in a row.
Right.
I'm freezing.
But it's March 22nd, it's 22 degrees.
It is very cold.
Like a lion, it's a mean, you know, angry lion.
Well, it really happens.
You get the fake spring, and then you go back to winter, and then, yeah.
It's a rainy spring, usually, around here.
That's usually April, May.
April, May. It's very rainy.
April showers bring May flowers.
And then it's June, and it's the same problem as Friday. Once it's June, it's basically winter.
My allergies started kicking in, like, the first week of March this year.
Now, once it's June, you've seen
it's June,
the longest day of the year, and it starts getting darker in the mornings again.
Basically winter when you hit June.
But we're
pretty
all
much
happy.
It's all downhill
it's
after
Friday,
that.
It's Friday, and it's great to be here.
Apple's not happy.
Apple's not happy. Bitcoin, maybe not so much either. It's down about 6% for the week. Again, all of these assets that really ran up over the last several weeks, giving back a little bit. Week to date, down 5.5%, actually. 65,556.
The heads of the nation's largest airlines want to sit down with Boeing. It's like is it like an intervention? Kind of.
No, I think it's like a skip level meeting.
CNBC has confirmed that the chiefs of United, American, Southwest, and Alaska Airlines have requested meetings with Boeing's board of directors to express concerns about the production problems at the aerospace giant, especially the Alaska Airlines MAX door plug incident in January and the company's response. Boeing Chairman Larry Kellner, along with several board members, are expected to meet with the airline CEOs starting next week. Larry should know everyone at United, obviously, but those gatherings will not include CEO David Calhoun and the CEO of commercial airplanes. Why?
Skip level. Skip level meeting. That's what they have around here. Go over your boss's head.
I see.
What are you doing about this Calhoun guy?
Yeah. So is that possible to do here?
I think they do it here, not with us, but with other people here.
Yeah. Can you send me a hierarchy?
Sure.
Because I'm not sure.
Who you should jump over to.
Yeah.
Who you should tattletale to.
I'm not sure who to jump over or who I'm jumping to.
Yeah.
It's the viewers that I try to satisfy, right? That's a good idea.
Except for the ones who tweet you.
They don't tweet me anymore.
Because they're blocked.
Because they are blocked.
Right.
I'm closing in on 10,000. God, I can't 10, wait.
10,000 blocked?
Not really. Maybe five or six. Five or six. Five or six.
Muting is better than blocking because right. They can't complain. Know. They don't know.
Really? I want them to know.
You want them to know they're blocked?
Okay. Yes.
Then fine. Keep blocking.
And see how they like that because they're dead to me.
I used to always mute, and then they can't complain later that I blocked them.
Well, I just like it because you don't get the satisfaction of knowing I did.
Exactly.
Right. And I don't have to see you anymore.
It's not satisfaction. I get the satisfaction. They're dead to me. They can never see the unbelievably great things on my Twitter.
Unless they log out.
If they log out, I guess they could. I don't know. They're gone. I don't see them again. Every once in a while, they'll be part of a track. Oh, I remember that person. And then I see.
Bye.
I'm really glad I blocked them. Yeah.
All right, in the meantime, Senator Elizabeth Warren urging the SEC to investigate Tesla's board independence. The senator calling out CEO Elon Musk and its board over what she called possible misappropriation of resources and conflicts of interest stemming from Musk's dual roles at Tesla and the social media platform X. Warren first expressed similar concerns back in July, but this time adds new concerns that recent evidence suggests Tesla's board lacks independence from Musk and is not operating in the best interest of shareholders. And just in the last hour, Bloomberg reporting that the company is trimming its output of cars in China amid slower EV sales growth and intense competition in that country. Tesla produces Model 3 and Model Ys in China. Its stock down by about 3%.
I want to do an It's a Wonderful Life on...
If he didn't exist.
Elon Musk and Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah. Oh.
And I want to do them side by side.
I like that.
You do?
Get them in a room together.
No, I mean, let's see what the world would look like. Let's see what the world would look like without Elon Musk.
Yeah.
And then without her?
Who knew?
Yeah.
What about the world?
Which do you think would be more
would not
impactful?
Be better?
Who would you miss more?
That's why I asked the question, Kovac.
Yeah.
So I don't have to say it because it's all about just asking questions.
Fair.
The government, how about a world without Steve
Apple.
Jobs?
Well, we've been there for a while.
I know, but we had Tim Cook to take the baton.
Yeah. He's done pretty
what,
okay.
What an incredible
look at the run.
Benefit to our lives Apple has been. Naturally, the government is going to take on Apple, claiming that the iPhone ecosystem is a monopoly.
Earlier today, the Department of Justice, joined by 15 states and the District of Columbia, sued Apple in the U.S. District Court for the District of New Jersey for violating Section 2 of the Sherman Antitrust Act. Today, Apple's share of the U.S. performance smartphone market exceeds 70%, and its share of the entire U.S. smartphone market exceeds 65%.
Steve Kovac joins us now with more. I'm in the Apple ecosystem. I don't want to leave. I don't feel like they're bullying me.
I got good news. You're not going to have to worry about this for years. It's going to be
We're fun. Not going to worry about it for so long that by the time it's settled, Apple will probably be totally supplanted by somebody
else.
We'll just like they've done every
AI,
other.
Well, Neuralink implants right. And all this kind of stuff.
We wouldn't have without Elon Musk either.
Exactly. So, and look, we saw shares fall 4% yesterday, and that's because this was just a really broad and far-reaching lawsuit and set of allegations touching on pretty much every product and service Apple has, maybe not the Vision Pro, but everything else. The App Store, smartwatches, Siri, Apple TV Plus, mobile payments, and just about everything else. And it's all centered around the iPhone, which the DOJ alleges gives Apple monopoly power here in the United States. And the alleged harm to customers and to app developers, well, they say more expensive products and services because Apple makes it difficult for third parties to compete on its platforms. Plus, collecting all those digital fees and services sold through the App Store, driving up costs customers have to pay. Now, Apple tells us in response to this lawsuit, quote, "This lawsuit threatens who we are and the principles that set Apple products apart in fiercely competitive markets. If successful, it would hinder our ability to create the kind of technology people expect from Apple." That's Joe's point as well, I think. Also says many of the decisions the company makes are to protect privacy and security of user data. So what's coming up next? The whole case is expected to take several years to play out, and it's unlikely the iPhone business here in the US is going to fundamentally change anytime soon. But if Apple loses this case, changes could look similar to what it's doing in Europe under tough new tech regulations. Things like opening up the iPhone and allowing third-party app stores to compete on price and offer new features Apple normally wouldn't allow. And the Department of Justice officials yesterday, they're not ruling out a breakup of the company, guys. So
I was thinking about this. It's not consumers that are screaming about this. Consumers love Apple. It is
maybe about the text messaging thing a little bit.
We were joking off camera before. The text messaging thing, not being part of it, it is a bullying situation. We bullied my dad into getting one so he could be in the family chat groups. My uncle Jim, we give him a lot of grief because it's harder to incorporate one of these other phones into these things. But it's their competitors who have been so angry about this, and we need to make sure that we protect the competitors so that they can bring the business about. But the competitors are people like
Spotify,
Meta, with a $1.1 trillion market cap, Microsoft with a $3+ trillion market cap. I mean, by the way, Microsoft's been through this and fought with the Justice Department and said none of this was legit in the beginning.
Right.
But now we're going to take and use the. It's just kind of a crazy cycle to see. You're beating me, so therefore it must be unfair.
Yeah, exactly. And the best product is winning, and therefore it's unfair. They just get wrong about Apple products and services. Apple TV is one of them. They say Apple TV Plus, I forget the exact quote, but something like it controls the flow of free speech. Is Ted Lasso controlling the flow of free speech? I don't know. But then there are some other things that do make sense, and they do have at least some evidence that some of these decisions they make in the name of privacy and in the name of making the product better are also to keep people locked in the ecosystem. Messaging is perfect. There are emails from executives saying, we don't want to put iMessage on Android or another platform and make it easier to text between because that would give people a reason to switch over to Android.
I mean, it's so inscrutable. I feel like I need to go to law school to understand what you learn when you're there where you end up thinking this is a good idea.
Yeah, and I mean, the other argument they have to make, again, customer harm, like we're talking about, there's little things that they can point to. But the other thing is the developers complaining. And then the argument, at least the argument we see in the EU, is when developers have to raise their prices in order to, you know, absorb those fees, then maybe that gets passed on to you.
Yeah.
Maybe that's less crazy. Maybe the fees need to be reconsidered or you know, adjusted. And the idea to do that is let more app stores on so they can compete on the fees there.
And we've seen when Apple doesn't succeed that they can have, you know, terrible failures just like anyone else. So
they have
a great success in this case that really stems from people liking what they do so much. When you're in business, you know, there's books you can read about war and compare that to business. Yeah, you do try to do better than your competitors. You're not always thinking, golly gee, how can I make it just totally fair for my competitors to compete? You don't do that. So you can nitpick and find things if you want, but this is just another example of sometimes what the government does best, and it looks at the goose that lays the golden eggs, and it just can't stand it. It can't stand it, and it goes over and tries to kill the goose that lays the golden eggs, and that's what I think is happening.
I don't think they think that's what they're doing.
They don't think that either. And there are some valid criticisms in here.
I don't know, but they don't think it, obviously. But is that the first time that the government's doing something that they're wrong about? What frustrates me the most is, I mean, I'd like to get rid of everybody this administration put in the business world. Everything they say about the business world, incorporate, like to get rid of it all.
Gina Raimondo's pretty good.
But you're bringing in someone that might not like Apple because Tim Cook didn't kiss his ring or something.
You talking about Cantor?
No, you bring in Donald Trump, and you have no idea why he holds a grudge.
Tim Cook kissed his ring a little bit.
I know he did.
Yeah.
I know, but what if he didn't? Then you could have, that's not a panacea for this going away.
I think this continues under another Trump administration. Just,
if it started under a Trump administration.
Yeah, it started.
Right.
I think
that's what
I mean.
If it was someone who was just a principled, like, libertarian or whatever.
That is not Trump.
No.
Cheese will be next.
Coming up on Squawk Pod, who's the more productive worker? CNBC reporter Kate Rogers has the data on where work happens.
Working fully remote actually is associated with 10% lower productivity than fully in-person work.
We'll be right back.
Canva presents stories to keep you up at night. It was an ordinary work day until...
The Singapore presentation is at
3 a.m.
The office was shocked.
That's when we sleep.
Maya made it less scary with Canva.
I'll just record my presentation so Singapore can watch it anytime.
Record and present anytime with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
You're listening to Squawk Pod.
Stand by, Joe. His mic, Q.
Good morning and welcome back to Squawk Box here on CNBC, live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. I'm Joe Kernan, along with Becky Quick. Andrew is off this morning. Remote work has taken off in the wake of the pandemic. 40% of U.S. employees are now working remotely at least one day a week, according to research from Stanford. But who is the most productive and from where? Kate Rogers is here with more. Hey, Kate.
Hey,
you're
Joe.
Here.
I'm here.
You're here.
Being productive here,
yes,
on set. Great to see you guys. So productivity really depends on what type of job you have and what type of self-discipline you possess. But on the whole, a research paper from Stanford on the evolution of work from home found that working fully remote actually is associated with 10% lower productivity than fully in-person work. Hybrid work actually appears to have no impact on productivity, but it is popular because it improves recruitment and retention, according to Steve Davis, who is one of the Stanford researchers. Data from JobList actually found that younger workers are seeking in-office experiences these days at higher rates than other generations, at a rate of 57% versus about a third in other generations. I actually spoke with two Gen Z workers earlier in their careers who say they prefer working in office for career growth opportunities, socialization, and yes, even productivity.
I think as someone who's pretty recently out of college, it's helped me transition into the workplace life more and just adulthood more, being with other adults.
I think being able to collaborate with your team is certainly a benefit of being able to go into the office. In my experience, collaboration was a lot more difficult when working remote. You know, you don't really have that in-person ability to really walk up to a desk and you know, ask the questions.
With all of that being said, these younger workers, as we all do, appreciate the one or two hybrid days that they're offered. That flexibility is nice, but they're saying they do like to be in person. Who knew?
The ones who really want to work remote, mm-hmm. not even hybrid, mm-hmm. it's Gen X, and those are the ones who are millennials, and those are the ones who are raising little kids. Right,
exactly.
Now.
That's what Steve Davis said, yeah, to me. Essentially, the people who are working the most, have the most paid work from home days, are those in their 30s or 40s with young children at home, yeah, because they need the flexibility. But as someone who does have a young kid, I actually prefer to be in the office. It's just easier to focus, right? And do our jobs well when you're not near them.
Everything you said, though, just it kind of seems like something that I thought, I already thought these things. I like the recruiting part. Yeah, if you don't have to work nearly as hard and you don't have to come into the office, it helps with recruiting. No kidding. I mean, this is a much cushier job here, believe me. Yeah, I'm good. Do you see what I mean? Of course it helps with recruiting.
It does. But you know, I think the whole point is we've gone to this place and it's so hard to pull back from that, especially for kids who started their careers with some type of flexibility, right? But I do think the socialization part and the, you know, ability to learn from your coworkers, remember, the pandemic kind of upended college for a lot of these younger workers, right? So they are missing out on that. And I have friends now who I met in my first job, and they're some of my closest friends. So there is a key socialization part there too.
Yeah, you're like the weirdo. It's like if you don't go to school till kindergarten, you don't know how to socialize.
No. A lot of those things were... Someone got mad at me for saying I don't wear a mask anymore. Masks did not help for people in terms of being able to read, express, or hear, or
look at lips.
It was a huge issue for kids. Do we know for sure that it was really, really... Do we know it was really, really helpful? Do we know that it prevent... I mean, we don't even know that. At this point, so, but it's just,
Look, I don't have any problem with other people who walk around in a mask. You want to do that, you do it.
Outside?
Whatever. If maybe they have COVID, just I don't know. But I don't care what somebody else is doing. That doesn't impact me.
Ever?
Well, as long as you're not touching me. Get away.
Don't look at me.
You have a nice distance here. Right. So nice to see you guys
good
in person.
You.
Your faces.
But I love
productively.
It is easier when you have small kids, I will admit. If you get the chance to be able to have full-time work, it is easier to do that.
And we're on TV, right? So it's a little bit of a different
situation.
Wait
a second. Right now?
Right now, Joe.
Oh, oops. We're not a commercial. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next on Squawk Pod, Reddit is finally public. After 19 years, 1 billion posts, millions of communities, and 2 moderator revolts that took part of the site dark. CNBC's Jonathan Vanian explains the long road for everyone in the Reddit community.
It really left a lot of bad blood between the managers and the moderators. So some moderators I spoke to have ideological feelings about why they don't want to participate. A lot of has to do with the concerns of the management.
And one of those moderators joins us. She had the opportunity to participate in the IPO, but chose not to. Reddit mod Courtney Swearingen on why she stays moderating, even with all that bad blood.
I continue to do it mostly because I really like the community that I've built and the friendships that I have.
Welcome to the Canva guided meditation for stress at work. Impending deadline? Generate Canva presentations in seconds.
So fast.
Brainstorm got too big? Ooh. Summarize with AI in a click.
Click, 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 click.
Writer's block? Release with Canva Magic Write.
Magical.
Stress less and save time at canva.com. Designed for work.
Welcome back to Squawk Pod from CNBC. Reddit, after 19 years, is finally a public company.
Reddit has just opened at $47. That was a premium to a serious premium to where it had originally priced at $34, around 38% upside. We're now watching the stock.
The social media platform priced at $34 on Wednesday night, but opened at $47 on Thursday, and then popped 48%. By the close, Reddit was at over $50 a share, giving it a market capitalization of $9.5 billion. A CNBC reporter I spoke to had his eye on the IPO subreddit as the first trades were made.
This is the Reddit IPO subreddit, and there is a lot of chatting interface, and you could see everyone sort of discussing the IPO, you know, from when it hit and it was popping at the beginning. I can't imagine another IPO process where we get real-time information on how the actual users are thinking as it's going on, commenting.
That's Jonathan.
Hi, I'm Jonathan Vanian. I am a tech reporter for CNBC based in the San Francisco Bureau. I cover the business of social media.
He's been writing about Reddit for a while. Today, it has 73 million daily active unique users, over 260 million active unique users every week. And of the millions of subreddits or online communities that have been created since the company's start in 2005, about 130,000 are currently active. And altogether, the site is home to over a billion posts. If you love Reddit, welcome. You're in the right place. And if you're still getting a handle on what exactly Reddit is, we're glad you're here. Because I sat down with Jonathan to suss out the Reddit risks and the Reddit value now that it's public.
It's a very unique social media property. It doesn't nearly have the scale as a company like Meta or Facebook with billions of daily active users. But the Reddit community has a very unique selling point. It is where people have incredible interest and they congregate and discuss all things from sports to Wall Street investing to knitting. It's every possible niche and interest you can think of on the web where people have many thoughts to share.
So for anyone that's been on Reddit, and it sounds like you've been on Reddit, I am not an avid Redditor, but I've poked around a little bit. Or for investors who are just trying to understand how it works, the moderators and the community are sort of what makes the platform what it is. In some ways, Reddit, the company, is kind of like a facilitator for these communities and all the conversations that you're mentioning.
It is where all those users, the daily active users, the ones that want to participate in the conversations, share their thoughts and opinions and any of the subjects. And the moderators who are responsible for essentially monitoring the specific forums, which in Reddit terms they call subreddits, they're the ones who essentially curate the best quality comments. They remove offensive content. They do all the editorial and cleanup work to make sure those forums read well.
And they're largely unpaid, which is part of why, to my understanding, Reddit created the directed share program before going public to give some of the users and some of the most active moderators that add the most value to the community a piece of the company as it listed. Reddit CEO Steve Huffman was on CNBC right ahead of the listing talking about this.
In this IPO, yes, we invited a number of our users and have a healthy retail component beyond that. And our goal there was to bring in, I think as is the ethos of Reddit, level the playing field, bring people in on the same terms that professional investors would.
The moderators on Reddit are volunteers and makes it akin to Wikipedia, which, funny enough, is one of Reddit's competitors that it lists in its corporate filings. They're pitching it as a way to help profit with the company that you helped contribute.
You've spoken to quite a few of the moderators who were offered this opportunity to participate in the directed share program. And it doesn't seem like everyone is on board with this idea.
Yes, you're very correct. Not everyone is on board. Moderators are a very unique bunch on Reddit. A lot have kind of issues with the management of Reddit over the years. Last summer, there was a really big infamous protest from the moderators. The moderators locked a lot of their subreddits. They were upset about these developer fees that Reddit introduced. Reddit at the time said they needed to introduce those fees as a way to make sure it was compensated when companies like Google take the Reddit data to train their AI models. Reddit said they needed to make sure that the price was, you know, fair so that the company can be compensated. But that pricing change had an effect on other developers who are building certain tools used by the moderators. It really left a lot of bad blood between the managers and the moderators. So some moderators I spoke to have ideological feelings about why they don't want to participate. A lot has to do with the concerns of the management. And also a lot has to do with the concerns of where does the company go once it becomes a publicly traded company?
This bad blood, this history of bad blood goes beyond just the 2023 revolt, right? In 2015, there was a blackout.
Ultimately, they survived this moderator protest, right? I mean, they're going public now, so it's not like, you know, everything was derailed.
An IPO not derailed at all. One of those moderators who was offered the chance to buy in but didn't joined Squawk Box after the listing. She played a major part in the first Reddit revolt of 2015 and again in the 2023 movement. Here's Becky.
Courtney Swearingen, she's been a Reddit moderator for 13 years and currently moderates multiple subreddits alongside her day job as an attorney. And Courtney, thanks a lot for being here this morning.
Thanks for having me.
I'm not sure everyone knows. We've talked a lot about it recently, but I'm not sure our entire audience knows how this relationship works. You're a moderator, which means you spend a lot of time going through moderating discussions on some of these issues. You're volunteering that time. You're not getting paid, and you've been doing this for 13 years. I guess the question is why?
Correct. Yeah. Why is because of the community. So I love Reddit because I've been able to create a community of friends. When I first started moderating, I used to know users by their first name and sometimes their last name. And we were able to connect and grow a real community of people that you knew you could rely on and you could trust and you had friends. I've met some of them in real life now. I can honestly say that I have internet friends that I have met in real life, and they've been my friends for a while. And some of them I've never met in person, but I know they'd be there for me at the drop of a hat if I needed them. So I continue to do it mostly because I really like the community that I've built and the friendships that I have.
Why did you decide not to opt in when the company offered you the opportunity to buy in at the IPO?
I have to be honest about that. So I didn't buy in because I have had this relationship with Reddit for so long that I can't really trust them. For me, it was a matter of I can't risk money on something that I just can't trust. I can't rely on it. We have a kind of fraught relationship with the admins, who are the actual employees of Reddit. Over the years, not all of us, not every moderator has that kind of relationship, but those of us who have been around quite a while do. And for me personally, it's just something that, as much as I love the community that I built, I love Reddit for what the volunteers have done, the moderators and the users, not what the admins have done. So it's just something that I just don't trust it.
It's such a strange relationship to think of moderators who are so important to the company and who, by the way, have held a lot of sway. You were involved with the 2015 revolt where some of the Reddit subreddits went dark because they were so unhappy with what was happening at the company. I mean, it's hard for investors to kind of understand that. This is something you've spent 13 years, I would guess you spend a lot of time practically every day working on this community, and yet you don't have a great relationship. But how do you see that playing out? Have things gotten better over the years?
They have, to an extent. You know, after 2015, there definitely was a rocky couple of years in there for that relationship. But we did kind of grow a little bit closer after that with the admins. They did fly us out to San Francisco, a small group of us, to meet and talk about, you know, our needs as moderators and the tools that we needed and the help that we really needed from them. And that helped a little bit. But we've gotten better, but it's not a lot better, at least not for those of us who have been doing it this long.
I mean, there's 74,000 moderators, at least, for a community that's got 73 million average daily active unique users. That's a huge, huge community. It's a huge number of moderators. What do you think about the company's moves to say, okay, we are going to have to try and find some ways to turn a profit? Because 19 years of Reddit, the company hasn't been profitable.
Yeah, that's kind of what surprises me about the IPO is that they've never been profitable. So I just don't understand how that's going to work. They've done a lot of updates lately to the website. We've been calling it the Reddit redesign for I don't know how long now. And they've made a lot of tools and made a lot of things better. And we're definitely grateful for that because it has made our job as moderators easier.
Okay.
But part of the frustration for me and a lot of moderators who have been around like me, is that most of that came when it sounded like they were starting to think about an IPO. So it wasn't that they were doing it because the people whose labor is building this site needed it. It felt like they were doing it because they wanted to make the money to make the IPO happen.
Well, to be fair, those tools probably cost money. It's hard to invest money if you don't think you're going to get money back on the other side.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And it is a business transaction at the end of the day. There's just a little bit of because Reddit felt like a community when it first started. And that's kind of how those of us who have been around a long time feel about it. It's really difficult to to kind of juxtapose that with not getting the help that we need as moderators, simply because I don't know, we don't know why. So we, you know, we understand kind of the tenuous relationship between those two things, sure. But we, it's hard to help grow the site if we don't have the tools we need to do the job.
Courtney, we've got to run, but I'm guessing you're not going anywhere. Unhappy or not, this has been so much of your life for 13 years. I would guess you're in this for the long haul.
Yeah, I love it. I really do. I love Reddit. I am so grateful for the opportunities it's given me. I mean, I get to be here with you today. I really do love it. I love the community I built. I love the time I spend on it. My relationship with the admins is not the greatest, but at the end of the day, I still love what I've gotten from Reddit. And so I will be around for a while.
Some of the moderators I talked to expressed to me one of the things that they were concerned with as far as how the platform might change as the company, you know, it's unprofitable. But if you look and study the financials of the company, you realize that so much of the money is made in the United States. So a large part of their plans is to expand internationally, which that sounds great, right? I mean, surely Reddit should expand elsewhere, maybe Europe, all these other countries. That's a huge user base, and that's probably really good for advertisers, right? Well, some of the moderators that I spoke to were really worried about what does that mean when the company starts operating overseas in places where maybe the governments don't really have the democracies the way we think of democracies here in the United States. All of a sudden, that's going to put Reddit in a position where we've seen companies like Facebook and Twitter and, you know, companies with big global user bases, when they are operating in countries that maybe have different cultural norms, different political beliefs, different ways, the governments have different way of enacting laws in those countries, that is going to put some pressure on Reddit. And the moderators are really worried about what does that mean? You know, what does that mean for the users and their privacy, for the data that they're doing, for the way they don't have to reveal their personal names?
Thank you so much for your time and for your reporting.
Definitely.
That's Squawk Pod for today and for the week. Thank you for listening. Squawk Box is hosted by Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin, weekday mornings on CNBC at 6 a.m. Eastern. Squawk Pod gives you the best of our three-hour TV show, plus a little extra, like today's interview with Jonathan Vanian from CNBC.com. If you like what you hear on the podcast, let us know. We're on the X platform. Our handle is at Squawk CNBC. We'll meet you back here on Monday. Have a great weekend.
We are clear. Thanks, guys.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.